All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, how was the weekend, man?
Well, you know, it was beautiful weather. Well, yesterday was,
Sandy,
I guess,
you have on a jacket.
I know.
It's almost July.
Yeah, it's just a...
It's protection.
It's prophylactic. It's just in case, you know?
I got up this morning. It was 65.
Mm-hmm.
And
look, we needed rain. This is all good.
Yeah. Well, did you get much?
Not a lot, but enough to... Saturday night, there was enough to make the place green.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know. I was so worn out on Saturday.
I was awake in the wee. I woke up and looked at my watch, which carries news flashes on it. And the news flash about the Prigozhin Russian uprising was there. So in the wee hours of Saturday morning, I was reading the news and trying to figure out what the heck was going on.
So for people who don't know what Prigozhin and who he is, and his involvement in the Ukraine war with Russia.
Yeah. Well, Prigozhin it's an interesting character. He was kind of created by Putin in a way. He was an ex-convict. He was in jail for some thievery when he was a young man. Started a catering business, a restaurant business, then a catering business. Then he began to cater to the Kremlin itself, became Putin's cook, they called him, Putin's chef. And then in 2013, he was commissioned by Putin, I presume, to start a private military, much like our Blackwater. When we hear Wagner Group, we should think Blackwater, which is the American version of it, essentially. So, you know, America has the same form of mercenary that we send into battles and are highly paid, much more highly paid than the military themselves. And they go in and they do the dirty work, and they do America's dirty work in places. And we can remember in Iraq when the Blackwater guys were then charged with war crimes because of some stuff they did. So Wagner is kind of a bigger, more independent version of Blackwater. And the Wagner Group played a significant role in the Crimea annexation. They were the military that went in on behalf of Russia. And there was no resistance. So that was a war that wasn't a war. The Crimea annexation occurred. The Wagner troops were the ones who carried it out. Not much fighting. Since then, the Wagner Group grew to be much larger. And they played there. The group, the Wagner Group, was talked about a lot because they carried a lot of the military hardware and the hard work the Russians were doing in Bakhmut. Okay, so the battles of Bakhmut, which were high-pitched battles between Ukraine and Russia, on the Russian side, it was the Wagner Group that was claiming success, claiming that they were doing it in spite of the incompetence of the Russian military. And it was at that point that Prigozhin began to break from Putin in the kind of stuff he was saying, taking on Shoigu, who is the head of the military operations for the Russian military, and Zemirov, and saying that the two of them were incompetent. And that led to what apparently was the tipping point over the weekend, which was on Friday. Apparently, Prigozhin claimed that the Russian military attacked the Wagner Group, attacked them with rockets, killing up to 2,000 of his troops in a pitched battle between Russian military and the Wagner Group, which led him then to start this action, in which he marched into the city of Rostov-on-Don. There are two Rostovs in Russia. One of them is on the Don River. Marched into Rostov-on-Don, which was the military headquarters for the Russian military leading the war in Ukraine, and took over the military headquarters of the Russian military and occupied the city of Rostov without firing a single shot. There was no resistance on the part of the Russian army.
You know, Sandy, that Prigozhin, and that group, that heavy armament that they have, the military had to give it to him, right?
Well, he obviously got it through through Putin's auspices. Prigozhin was able to get heavy military. And in fact, not only did he take over Rostov, but he immediately sent a military cortege armada on by road on Highway M that leads from M3, I think it is, from Rostov to Moscow. And that cortege headed off and within 12 hours had gotten itself within 250 miles of Moscow and had taken over the city of Voronezh, again without a military battle. And so, you know, he was achieving a great deal of success in the city of Rostov. The Wagner troops were applauded and cheered by the Rostov locals, so that it was a display, I think, because Prigozhin talks about how the war in Ukraine is not being adequately fought by the Russians, and argues that the Russians should be pulling out all the military stops, fighting competently, and winning the war in a way that they aren't winning the war now. So in some respects, Prigozhin represents a hawk on Ukraine. Interestingly, over the weekend, he also, however, announced that he thought that the war of Ukraine had been started because of faulty intelligence from the military, and that, in fact, there was no need for an invasion, that the invasion was really a Putin foolishness led by the military, because Zelensky would have negotiated with Putin, but Putin refused to negotiate because Putin was believing his military, and his military was telling him that Ukraine was on the verge of invading Russia.
So initially, Putin's first response was, I'm going to crush him.
Yeah. Oh, he went on the air, gave a speech as if from the Oval Office to the Russian people, saying that it was a mutiny, it was treason, and that the Wagner troops were going to be dealt with appropriately for treason and that they would be crushed. And that he had given orders to his military accordingly, meaning kill them. And however, the cortege didn't stop. But what did happen, apparently, is that Lukashenko, who is the leader of Belarus, contacted Putin and said, look, I can broker something here. Do I have your authority to do so? Apparently Putin gave him some authority. Lukashenko then contacted Prigozhin and worked out a deal in which Prigozhin agreed that the Wagner troops would essentially stop their march on Moscow and would withdraw from Rostov in exchange for essentially all of the Wagner troops being promised safety, and that he, Prigozhin, would be promised a safe passage to Belarus where he could live safely in exile. Now, we'll see how that all plays out, because this morning's news is that neither Putin nor Prigozhin have been seen in person since Saturday.
Let's do this. Let's go to the phone lines and CJ. Good morning, CJ. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. And before Sandy deflects and talks over me, let's remember how we got here. The weakness of our president, remember?
Let me, CJ, why is it always revisionist? We're long past how we got here. We're into the fact that this is year number two of this war, and where is it headed? We can keep going back to how it started. And what purpose does that serve?
Well, the 13 soldiers that died matter, and I care about them.
So
the mere fact of our weakness, remember, this president promised to deter, wasn't going to happen as the buildup happened. I'm the only one that can go toe-to-toe with Putin. Well, this war was caused by this president's weakness.
You know,
guys go on and try to solve it through your theories.
Well, wait. CJ, wow, derision doesn't really get you anywhere, I don't think. But we're not trying to solve this war. We're talking about a circumstance. That's all we're doing right now is talking about the circumstance that's going on in Russia right now. We're not even talking about how the war started. To some extent, we're talking about this in the context of how it might affect the ongoing war. But this is a circumstance that what you're doing, CJ, is deflecting a conversation that makes sense for the American people to talk about what's going on today. And you're deflecting it back to a political contest for presidency and trying to figure out how to bootstrap your statement about how the war started as part of a political race for president. We're not here to talk about the race for president. We're not talking about it right now. We're talking about a circumstance in Russia. So, you know,
a dangerous circumstance.
Yeah. So, and I think we need to talk about it because, you know, the circumstance in Russia, Russia is the largest nuclear power in the country, in the world, and a vacuum of power in Russia is not necessarily a good thing. I'll concede for the purpose of discussion whatever someone wants to assert about how the war started, because it's history and we can all analyze the facts. And I'll concede whatever fact you want me to concede about it. But can we just talk about the present?
Well, 13 soldiers matter to me.
Well, I didn't, look, I'm not saying 13 soldiers don't matter to me. The 13 soldiers you're talking about, incidentally, are in Afghanistan, okay? And we can try to connect all those dots historically. Historians will do a pretty good job of it over time, and information will come out. Maybe you're right. You know, who knows? Can we talk about today, though? Can we talk about today's problems? Or do we always have to look in the mirror to figure out how we can fashion arguments about who should be president of the United States in the next election?
Well, this president promised and said that he's the one that could stop this from happening, Sandy. He didn't, did he? He didn't do
CJ, you know, this is... I guess, no, he did not stop it from happening.
And neither did Donald Trump.
And so I don't know about whether he could have or not. I don't know whether his promise made any sense or not. Can we not talk about the current circumstance, or are you unable to do that?
I want to remind you. You just conveniently forget it. So
okay, CJ, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be back.
Their dedicated team of superheroes can help with everything from parking lot lighting upgrades to office and business LED conversions, EV chargers to service upgrades. Call 262-295-2815 or log on to callcurrent.com.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Scattered thunderstorms likely this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 71, northwesterly winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered thunderstorms.
The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with Sandy Williams. And so, Sandy, whether or not people are interested in what transpired over this weekend, it's a big story.
Well, you know, it's a big story because people are tending, you know, we tend to be like the NFL, and now the coach of the other team is maybe going to get fired. You know, Putin is on, but we have to be careful what we wish for, because Putin does represent a level of stability in Russia. We might not like the calls he makes on certain shots about what Russia ought to be doing or not doing, like the invasion of Ukraine, but Russia has a huge nuclear arsenal. We don't want Russia to break up in the same manner that the Soviet Union broke up, because the Soviet Union broke up into republics, each one of which had a government of sorts. They were in a position where they could land on their feet, sort of. You know, they fell apart economically for about 10 years, but they did have governments. They were able to continue. We were able to negotiate with Russia to get the nuclear arms out of the hands of the Ukraine, which incidentally, at that time in 1991, it was viewed that Ukraine was so corrupt that if it held the nuclear arsenal that was stationed there by the Soviet Union, that nuclear arsenal could get in the hands of terrorists and it could be awful. So, you know, there was a mechanism to kind of carry that out rather smoothly as far as the world was concerned. There's no mechanism like that that would come into play if Russia fell apart and there was a vacuum. What we would have is probably a fight between the military and we don't know who else to take control of Russia directly. We don't know whether, you know, Prigozhin, would he be better than Putin? Well, he seems to speak the truth. He also, the Wagner Group, also beheaded people with sledgehammers who were viewed as deserting. And so, you know, we've got to be careful what we wish for when we watch another country and watch it potentially slip into a vacuum. What would have happened in the United States if January 6th had gone the other way? You know, January 6th isn't altogether different than the Wagner-Prigozhin uprising in terms of it, the potential instability and the way the world looked at it when it happened.
You know, Sandy, Blinken, I was watching him on Sunday, and I think what happens in this country is that there aren't enough people left who know of the horrors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's not being taught. And so we move around in our own circles in our lives in this country. And we're so protected from even the thought of nuclear annihilation because the gatekeepers did such a good job, Sandy, of explaining it and making sure that other nations and people were aware of what that is, that has never happened since. And so we just assume that it will never, ever, ever happen again because we all assume that if there is, the nuclear movement, that detente is going to happen. But detente happening means we're all gone.
Well, we should understand. The biggest Prigozhin criticism of Putin is that he's not conducting the war in Ukraine to win it, that he ought to be pulling out all the stops. And if Putin becomes in a very fragile position politically in Russia, his level of desperation might well increase.
Right.
His willingness to demonstrate superpower is going to go up. And so, you know, what's being created with this instability could be altogether dangerous, particularly with respect to a nuclear arsenal. The use of nuclear weapons tactically in the field in Ukraine could go up materially. We've already been talking about that risk. And the notion that winning the war in Russia without them pulling out the stop of potentially using nuclear tactical weapons is relatively low. We understand that. And it's one of the reasons that we've used some restraint in the level of aid that we've provided to Ukraine, because we recognize these risks. But what we've got to be careful about is how we talk about this domestically and what appetite we create in our domestic politics for what we do internationally. Because we might have people who understand the international risks, but if we don't explain them to the people in the United States adequately, the people of the United States politically will push us in directions we don't want to go. For instance, as you mentioned off the air, when Biden calls Xi a dictator, he was doing that to a domestic audience as if he could talk domestically without it having international implications. Well, of course, internationally, it had implications immediately.
You know, Sandy, the American people aren't interested in this kind of conversation. And I think it is because they'll say, well, what can we do about it? Right? If it happens, you know, it happens. But I think when you look at it from that perspective, you really can. I mean, we need to fight as hard as we can and as fiercely as we can to wake up the American people so we don't accept, well, if it happens, it happens. Show. My co-host Sandy Williams is in the studio as well. Let's go to the phone lines. And we're talking about over the weekend, what's the name of that guy again?
Prigozhin.
Prigozhin. And the situation that occurred in Russia and this past weekend. Let's go to the phone lines and David from Mequon. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Well, this is what I'm going to say. I do not have faith in the U.S. government, plain and simple. And the reason being,
in this situation.
We just had, and I know this is kind of diverging off of what you guys are talking about, but we just had.
No, you wouldn't diverge off what we're talking
that
about.
That imploded in the ocean. It's hard to think of a better way to undermine institutional credibility than to spend days pretending that a submersible may be, essentially A-okay, you know, that they were alive, but they knew right away that it imploded. And so we spent all these hours and hope and everything, millions of dollars, knowing they already knew, the military already knew that it imploded. They could just save the trouble and just been honest. And nobody's going to be held to account. That's what concerns me more than anything. And Blinken backed up with Biden, what he said about with Xi over the weekend, calling him a dictator. And that's, of course, got Beijing all pissed off. And now you have the whole situation with Russia. And that is becoming a loose cannon. And that is, unfortunately, if it does become a loose cannon, there's going to be repercussions throughout the entire world. Because they were very, very close. Russia was very close to having a civil war over the weekend. If that would have happened, holy hell, that would have been, I think, way worse than people realize and think, well, Putin would be killed. The problem is there's people worse than Putin that probably would come into power. They would have no problems pushing the button and using nuclear weapons within a matter of time. So we are in very, very shaky ground right now. I think a lot more than people realize. So,
I'm glad to have you talk about these things because I think the American public needs to get far more sophisticated and far more interested in our foreign affairs, how we formulate them, how we think about them, break down the simplicity of us against them and, the applause, the applause that would break out because Russia's having problems. Was the rest of the world applauding on January 6th when we were potentially in a situation of insurrection? It's very complicated. And, America's institutions could have broken down after January 6th, too. The world is much more fragile than we think, and we can't just tinker with it the way we do, and we can't let domestic politics operate without sophistication. President Biden talks to a local audience and with bravado talks about the dictator Xi in China, but of course, that's totally contrary to any sort of sensible international affairs approach to China, but we use it domestically. Same thing has happened with Ukraine. We've simplified the Ukraine conflict down to a we-they problem, And the people of America, I'm sure if we took a poll, were cheering for Prigozhin to accomplish essentially the beginning of a civil war in Russia without understanding, like I think you do, the unbelievable potential downside consequences of that.
You know, guys, I think that this thought that America itself has to be the arbiter of all of this. There's a big world. There's a lot of other nations. Why should all of these things fall in our lap? And we encourage it to fall in our lap.
Well, and also I think Dave recited another thing, which is our lack of faith in the truth of what we get in the way of information. We all know that the information we're getting about Ukraine is steeped in the propaganda from Ukraine, and probably coincident with the propaganda the United States would like to have coming out of Ukraine. And, you know, the military was certainly reluctant to come out about this submersible. They say now that they couldn't be sure that the sound they heard in their detection information was the implosion. But, and who knows when they shared that information, who they shared it with. But what it does show is the skepticism that we as Americans have about the information we get. And it's part of what has led to Trumpism, really, to the ability to follow someone who takes on the government in every way is probably because we don't trust our government.
But Sandy, the foreign policy of the United States government has never been privy to the American people.
No, it's always been created in dark rooms.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the American people, this is what we get, and we hear this is the best thing in our names. The American people, we're speaking for you.
Yeah, we're doing it on your behalf.
Yes,
yeah.
This is the best thing for you.
And then basically the implicit message is, here's what you need to do to be a patriot. Trust us, we're doing the right thing. Trust us. We're invading Iraq for very significant reasons that only our intelligence knows about. Trust us, we need to be in Vietnam. Trust, you know, all these trust us circumstances have basically caused all of us to say, trust you?
And we get caught in again, like with CJ, the Democrats did it. Or this is not Democrat or Republican when it comes down to the foreign policy of the United States government. It is not predicated on whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans. The foreign policy of this government, I dare say, is not either Democrat or Republican.
No, and in fact, for decades up until about the last 4 years, we always prided ourselves on the notion that foreign policy was bipartisan and that we weren't going to be divided about how we talked about how we were going to deal with the rest of the world. And that was surely the case during the Cold War. It was not possible to speak in any fashion contrary to the basic foundation of American policy based on the Cold War. And ever since then, we've tended, you're right, to have a bipartisan policy. And the mistakes that have been made in our international affairs are definitely made by both parties. And I'm in disagreement with the current foreign policy, I believe, just as much as I would have been in disagreement, well, I think with Trump's, maybe Trump would be doing some of the right things in terms of what I would agree with, but I'm quite confident he would not be doing them for the right reasons.
You know, so whether people are going to take the time out of their busy lives or not to focus more on this, who knows? But we're going to keep talking about it because it's, we hope that it doesn't come a point in time, Sandy, where it does capture all of the news. Because when it gets to that point,
yeah,
it's almost the point of no return.
Oh, the problem is these things happen quickly, okay? Nuclear weapons will be brought out of their sheath quickly, just as this revolution or potential civil war in Russia happened in the blink of an eye, and it was a surprise to everybody, including the Russians. The people of Rostov woke up to their surprise to find Wagner troops occupying the city and having taken over the military headquarters. It happened in 20 minutes.
So listen to this, Sandy, because this is an article that talks about what China stands to gain from peace talks. Growing geopolitical power is giving China both the motivation and potentially even the means to negotiate an end to the fighting in Ukraine. Bravissimo.
Yeah.
Why would we be opposed to that?
Well, the fact is that China's playing a role in smoothing out the Mideast. I mean, the fact is that someone with all the trading power that China has can exercise its economic connections in a manner that's positive, and they don't choose to tinker in the governments inside the countries. We, ever since the neocons of the 1990s, have decided it's our job to install our version of democracy everywhere, and so it taints and constrains the positions we can take with respect to bringing international peace between adversaries. China isn't taking that position, and therefore is in a position to deal with Iran and to deal with Israel and to deal with Saudi Arabia and to square that circle.
So why would we care who brings the peace? There needs to be peace in that region, in that area. We can't seem to make it happen because we are engaged in part of, disrupting things.
Sure. I mean, we're trying to sanction the bejesus out of Iran. We are hardly in a position then to bring Iran to the peace table, other than maybe giving up our sanctions, which domestically would be hard for us to do because we've painted ourselves into a corner in our domestic policy.
So if China is able to make these things happen, I say who it's not about, they get credit and we don't.
Is this article suggesting that we're worried that they'll get credit for this?
Well, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, it's kind of
the American people, the American people, all wars do end usually thanks to negotiated peace agreements. Consider that a fundamental historical fact, even if it seems to have been forgotten in the Brussels, Moscow, and above all, Washington, D.C. What they're basically saying is somebody has to be able to bring this to an end. We can't do it. We could do it. But we want, for whatever reason, we want to bleed Russia to be bleeded of its military parts. And so we want them to continue to suffer the losses of their ground troops and their equipment. It's what we want to see happen. And so if Ukraine can make that happen, Sandy, I may be wrong, but this is the way I see it.
I don't think you're wrong, because I think in inopportune, extemporaneous comments, both Blinken and Biden
have said it. Yeah,
that they're happy about this. And in fact, Lindsey Graham sat right there and said he was happy with Zelensky because of the best money we've ever spent, because Russians are dying, and they're spending their resources on this war. It's not a secret. We've announced that we think it's wonderful. The longer this war goes on, the more Russia exhausts itself in the effort.
Yeah, and so even though I'm an American, Sandy, it doesn't mean that I should follow blindly those who lead us. And you have to be 100% agree with our policies. If our policies don't make sense to you as an American citizen, we're in a nation that says we have a right to say, hey, nay. Right?
Well, absolutely. And, and the notion that we, what we choose to do, I guess, is to focus our efforts and our attention on other countries that are powerful. China's powerful. Russia's powerful. Greece isn't powerful. We don't seem to care about countries like Greece or what happens happens in Sudan or other places. And we tend to worry about the governments of those places. And so we talk a lot about the Russian government. The Russian government certainly isn't perfect. We wouldn't want to import it here to the United States. I wouldn't choose to move there and live in and amongst it. But we can't formulate our foreign policy in a manner that's designed to dictate to the world how they regulate themselves. And the more we do that, the more we back ourselves into this kind of a corner where we're expending our finite resources to accomplish something we can't accomplish.
So I welcome China if they can do whatever it is they can to bring an end to that. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy.
Wait, I want to ask you. You said you were cooking for how many hours this weekend?
6 hours.
And what was the event?
Well, it was birthday party for the children.
Well, tell me about that. What is that?
So there's this guy. His name is Homer Blow. He's a DJ. And for 29 years this year, he on his birthday, which was Saturday, he has a foundation and he raises money and he buys $10,000 worth of toys for children.
Wow.
And their families come and it's like Christmas because, you know, the good prizes, the bikes and the electric cars and all of those things, you know, raffle tickets, mm-hmm. and they call off the raffle numbers, and the kids win there. But there are all sorts of other toys. No kid walks away with nothing. And so, you know, I'm on the grill because
well, who else is there? Community must be there. You said
the
police
entire
chief,
community
police
is there.
Chief, police chief,
the community is there. It's one of the biggest events. Outside of Juneteenth Day in our community.
Where was it held?
They shut down Villard Street from 29th through 32nd. There are these big where kids jump in the...
Oh, yeah, a jumpy house.
Six jumpy houses, and it's just an unbelievable...
You know, we don't talk enough about the good stuff that happens in our city.
But that's...
There's good stuff going on. No guns.
No.
No bad outcome.
No, Sandy.
All good, all positive.
At least 3,000 people.
Yeah.
Or more there. Resource fair. All sorts of positive things. And so people say, hey, Earl, why are you always doing those things? Man, it's energy, Sandy. I feed off of the energy of the children and the families in activities that they don't normally get.
You know, we talk about foreign affairs and these other things during the show, but if everyone focused 90% of their energy on doing positive things locally that affected people who need to have positive things in their lives, we could change things. We could change the world. You know?
Sandy, there's no question. If I didn't think, and I'm only doing my little part,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I'm on the grill, and that's my little part. But when I go home, you know, I'm exhausted. No question. I'm exhausted. But, man, there's nothing in the world when you see people lined up waiting to get that piece of chicken, right?
Yeah.
And that you just, you know, spend time nurturing.
Yeah. tell the chicken you are nurturing it. Yeah.
Because I want to make sure that every piece is done properly. I make sure that I stick the thermometer in each piece of chicken that I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
And I think there, I had 250 pieces of chicken and 340 hot dogs that I personally was responsible for.
And you didn't eat them. You served them.
No, you don't have time. And then we're giving it away free.
But, you know, this has already made me think what I want to do on my birthday. And I think we should, I think we should talk this up, because I think this is a really good idea. And I think this is something that people who have the capacity to do it could easily give on their birthdays. And we could have this going in all sorts of neighborhoods all around Milwaukee.
Sandy, I'm telling you, the energy level. I was with the chief of police. He was there for, we talked for 30 minutes. Hey, a busy guy like the chief of police takes his time to stop at the grill and say,
He probably ate some of your good chicken then.
Yeah, he had a little something.
Yeah.
You know, but it's
donuts. They start with donuts and move on to chicken.
Sandy, all of these law enforcement officers interacting with the families. There were so many law enforcement officers, but this is not negative interaction.
Right.
This is positive reinforcement.
Yeah, they weren't there to keep the peace. They were there to shake hands and do things. Yeah.
Yes. And this is part of, and to the credit of Chief Norman, who we're going to have on probably next week, that's what he does. That's what he sees. Yes, there's a time to be tough, but there's also a time to say that these officers are part of the community. And to the credit of the Milwaukee Police Department, Sandy, they have done a wonderful job of recruiting police officers who look like the people that they are serving. That does matter, Sandy.
Sure.
It really does. And all of these young police officers, male and female, who come from that community, It all works.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, this has actually given me an uplift as I drive home. I'm going to imagine birthdays, but also what people I know who have, everyone has birthdays, right?
And
particularly
the last decades
of our life, if they're lucky. As long as I'm lucky enough to have a birthday, I'm gonna think about doing things like this, and maybe we should start something.
You and I, certainly, Sandy, as always, you know, knowing your philanthropic thought process on things. Yes, there's more than enough room at the end, right?
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. Listen, everybody. Thank everybody who made the show go. As always, thank you, Calvin. Thank you, Sandy. Got to go to a break. I got to go and deliver a little blood. I think I got enough in me.
Well, you know, that's another thing. You not only give time, you now you're giving blood, and not to a vampire. This is for this is for the good of all mankind,
wait, Sandy,
right?
I've had to use some blood.
Yeah,
my life.
I think I have too on occasion.
Yeah. And so you never know when you're going to need some, or when your family members or when your loved ones are going to need some. And I would say to all of you listening, if you can, donate some blood. Got to go. 844-967-2789. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.